It's encouraging to come together and worship God as we've begun to sing those good songs about God's grace, about the hope that we have because He lives. Last Sunday morning, we began a series of studies about laying aside sin, taken from the passage there in Hebrews chapter 12 and the first two verses that was even read a few moments ago. In this text, the writer there says that we're to lay aside every weight in sin which clings closely. We've talked about, from the rest of this chapter, in more general terms, what's involved in laying aside sin. There are some points that we can take away from chapter 12. But additionally, in this passage, if we're going to apply it, if we're going to do this, we're going to have to take a very close examination of our lives and identify specifically the sin that is in my life, that is in your life, in order for us to remove it, to lay it aside so that we might run this race so as to receive the prize that God has promised. That sounds all well and good, but it's not a process most of us enjoy participating in. Perhaps we don't mind talking about sin. We know that sin is real. We know that it is ever present in our world. We can look around and see it in society. We can see it in the lives of other people. We can see it in the schools. We can see it in politics. We can see it all around us. But often we fail to see it within our own lives. So what is the sin that clings so closely to you? What is the sin, as other translations say, that so easily tangles you up and throws you off course? Yes, there are very specific sins. We know their names, that each one of us struggles with. In this part of our study, we're going to begin to look at some more specific sins that are quite relatable, perhaps more relatable than we would like to admit. But we're going to identify some sin and what must be done in order for us to lay it aside so that we can run in such a way to receive the prize. This morning, as most of you are aware, we're going to talk about laying aside the sin of anger. Anger has been likened to fire. Fire benefits our lives in lots of ways. When properly harnessed and controlled, you can heat your home. You can send people to the moon. But if not controlled, it's destructive. We can look to wildfires in California, Australia. We know what uncontrollable raging fire does. Well, so too is this emotion of anger, if not properly controlled, if not dealt with. It will destroy us and those who are the recipients of our anger. Why does anger cling so closely to us? Why are we angry? Somebody says, well, how much time do you got? Oh, there are reasons. There are reasons. Perhaps it is your upbringing. Perhaps you were raised in an angry home by angry parents. Often we might justify our anger that, well, I'm just like my daddy. I'm just like my mama. Is it your upbringing? Yes, we all are products of our upbringing in some form or fashion, and that can be good and that can be bad, but perhaps that's a reason Is there just resentment that you have? There are unresolved issues that you have with people, things left undone. Are you holding a grudge? The mere mentioning of someone's name makes your blood start to pump a little faster. Your face start to change complexion just at the mentioning of someone's name. That's resentment. That's where it can come from. Is it selfishness? Sometimes you will find people in the world who think that, well, the world is supposed to bend at their every whim, at their every demand. And when it does not bend, and it often doesn't, well, they're angry. They're angry about it. We can explode in those moments. Is it just pressure? There are lots of pressures that we have in life. Some of those pressures are felt at work. There are deadlines that we have to meet that create stress. We're very tense. Long hours at the office, and we come home and take it out on our families. Maybe it's just the opposite. Maybe it's not work. Maybe it's unemployment. Have you ever been unemployed? I didn't say retired. I said unemployed. Those are very stressful, pressure-packed seasons of life. Because we have bills to pay and mouths to feed. There are people who rely and depend upon us and those incomes that our employment brings. And when we don't have it, you know, the pressures of life. Children create pressure. Children create pressure. Elizabeth and I were talking about this. I said, you know, if it wasn't for the kids, I wouldn't be angry. I guess the solution is we just got to raise the kids. Piece of cake. There are lots of pressures in life that cause us to be angry. And the thing about the pressures of life is that there's always pressure in life. There's always something, someone, some situation that brings stress regardless of where you are in life. The issue becomes, well, how do you manage that? Loss. Yes, loss. Loss will create anger. Often does. We recognize that anger is a stage of grief. Why did I lose my spouse? Why did I lose my child? Why me? Now that's very real. So we try to deal with that loss. Maybe there's just some injustice that has happened. You've been wronged. And no one has been held to account. And now, well, that's not fair. That's not right. Somebody ought to do something about it. And we allow that to turn into resentment and these feelings of wanting to take vengeance. We feel as though we are entitled to a pound of flesh because of injustice. Well, the world is filled with injustice. If you haven't been wronged yet, you will. How do you deal with that? There are some things in life that, well, are never going to be made right. Now, even Christians who are running this race will be wronged to the point things will never be made right in life. And so how can we run the race when I'm harboring anger stemming from injustice? Why are we angry? Maybe there are some other reasons we could add to this list. But there are often reasons. But what about anger? In Proverbs, there's a number of passages that warn about anger, that describe the nature of it, what it does, why we need to address it, to bring it under control, to deal with it. First of all, anger behaves foolishly. Anger behaves foolishly. In Proverbs chapter 14, and Proverbs really, it makes a case as to why the Bible is relevant in today's world. Proverbs certainly is not the only book of the Bible that is relevant. But our lives would be much improved if we would heed the wisdom found in this very rich book. A man of quick temper acts foolishly in verse 17. In verse 19, whoever is slow to anger has great understanding, but he who has a hasty temper exalts folly. What I appreciate about Proverbs is you don't have to be a scholar to know what that writer's talking about. We know what he's talking about because of experience. Have you ever acted foolishly when you're angry? You ever thrown something up against the wall? You ever kicked something? You ever got hurt because you were angry? Kicking things and slamming walls and just as quick as you're done with it, you think, why did I do that? Anger behaves foolishly. Is there any evidence of that in the world? You ever watch sports? You want to see anger behaving foolishly? Watch some of these coaches. Watch some of these coaches acting like fools. For the world to say, I will see things and I will think, here's these fellows, they've got grandkids. You know, their grandkids watching them act like a fool on the sideline. I had a coach. I played sports for a few years, not long, but I had a coach. We were playing a consolation game, basketball game. Consolation game, right? Last game of the season doesn't mean anything. And we started to lose in the first half. We got in the locker room, and this coach, and I'm telling you, it was a big deal. It was like eighth grade. So, I mean, this is a big, big deal. You know, this coach, it's the game of his life, I guess. He got so angry, he started beating his hand on the chalkboard to the point blood spurted out of his finger and onto Joe's jersey. Broke his hand over a consolation game with a bunch of eighth graders. That's anger behaving foolishly. But just the opposite is true of what he says in verse 19. Whoever is slow to anger is great understanding. You see, ladies and gentlemen, there are some situations we'll find ourselves in that need to be addressed, that need to be dealt with, that require our action. The question is, well, how do we respond? If we respond in anger, we will make a bigger mess than what was already there. Anger abounds in other sins. Anger abounds in other sins. In Proverbs chapter 29 and verse 22, a man of wrath stirs up strife, and one given to anger causes much transgression. Anger fuels many other sins. Anger is the fuel of many other sins. Think about anger causing us to curse. Who are we to pronounce a curse on someone else? Causes us to use all kinds of abusive language. Causes us to lie and to slander, to get even with someone. Causes us to fight. You know, sometimes Christians get into fights. You ever known an adult to get in a fist fight at work? I mean, if you've ever worked in the shop, it's hot in the summertime, let alone in Houston in the summertime, and tempers rage. Anger causes us to seek revenge. Where you find anger, you'll find a whole host of other problems, of other sins present. Anger creates strife. It creates strife. In Proverbs 15 and verse 18, a hot-tempered man stirs up strife, but he who is slow to anger quiets contention. An angry person's always looking for a fight. Have you ever known someone like that? They're just looking for a reason to argue, a reason to cause trouble. An angry person has a way of making other people angry. They pull others right into their misery. There's some people, ladies and gentlemen, who just always seem to bring drama with them. And they live their lives just one angry drama after the next. You know, the Bible says Christians are supposed to live a quiet and peaceable life. Why is all of this drama in my life? Well, perhaps There is some uncontrolled anger that needs to be dealt with. Perhaps that's what is clinging so closely to you. And it's time to lay it aside. Anger is overwhelming. I hope you're paying attention to these descriptions of anger, all of these different aspects of it, as are pointed out in Proverbs, and thinking about, well, how has that affected me? Can I relate to anger being overwhelming? In Proverbs 27 and verse 4, wrath is cruel, anger is overwhelming, but who can stand before jealousy? Some translations say instead of anger is overwhelming, anger is a flood. Anger is a flood. You all know about the devastation of flooding. When the rain is pouring down here in Houston so hard and so fierce that you can't see when you're on the road, are you supposed to stop under an overpass? Is that a good idea? No. Why? Well, flash flooding. Flash flooding. Water, in a moment's notice, comes rushing through there and carries with it whatever's in its path. When I was growing up, I used to spend a lot of time in the summers down in Tennessee where my grandparents lived. And where they grew up, there was a large waterfall. And it was kind of a neat place to go, but you had to be careful down there. Had to be careful, very steep. Once you were down on the bottom of it, you couldn't just get back up to the top very quickly. Well, a number of years ago, they turned what was, I jokingly say, was my grandparents' backyard into a state park. And it has attracted a lot of attention, and people will go down there in the summertime. Sometimes they'll bring kids who grew up in the city in Nashville, and they'll bring them in down there to go through Cummins Mills. Well, one summer, they brought some kids down in there, and a storm came, and just like that, flash flooding down there in the holler, and it killed 2 kids. And that happens almost routinely down there. People die. Solomon is saying, that's what anger's like. That's what anger's. It overwhelms. It quickly rushes in and takes people away. It destroys people. Creates vulnerability. In Proverbs 27, or in Proverbs chapter 25, rather, in verse 28, a man without self-control is like a city broken into and left without walls. Of course, ancient cities had walls to protect them from outside invaders. If someone wanted to take a city, they'd have to break down the walls. If a city didn't have walls, it wasn't going to last very long. He's saying that's what a man who doesn't have self-control, someone who doesn't have his emotions under restraint, is vulnerable. The devil can use that vulnerability, that moment of anger, to get us to commit more sin, to cause more damage, to hurt more people, to bring about more destruction. The devil's always looking for opportunity. He's looking for vulnerabilities that he can exploit to bring about death and destruction. Lastly here, anger is isolating and self-destructive. The Proverbs point that out to us. For example, in chapter 9, in verses 7 and 8, whoever corrects a scoffer gets himself abuse, and he who reproves a wicked man incurs injury. Do not reprove a scoffer, or he'll hate you. Reprove a wise man, and he'll love you. Who wants to go straighten the angry person out? Not me. I know better than that. You see how it's isolating? It's a sin that pushes you away from other people. It breaks relationships. People who should help you and be there to encourage you, you've pushed them away. They don't want to be around you. I mean, Proverbs here's warning. You know, here's what will happen if you try to engage someone who's given to anger. In chapter 22 and verses 24 and 25, make no friendship with a man given to anger, nor go with a wrathful man, lest you learn his ways and entangle yourself in a snare. There's the influence of an angry person. An angry person spewing out his venom. Maybe you listen to that and you think, well, maybe he's got a point. And he persuades you to go right along with him. It's isolating and self-destructive. Nothing good comes from it. So, what do you do about it? What do we do about anger? What do we do about the situations in our lives, sort of what we talked about earlier, the reasons why we're angry? What do we do with those situations in order to control anger? How to lay it aside? Well, we've got to endure. And that's what Hebrews 12 is telling us. We have to endure. There's some situations in life that you have to deal with, that you can't avoid. And there are some situations in life, and listen very careful to me because this is hard for us to accept. There are some situations in life where there are not good, nice, neat solutions. What happens when something's going on and there isn't a very good, neat solution? You can get frustrated. You can get angry. The American Psychological Association says about this that there's a cultural belief that every problem has a solution, and it adds to our frustration to find out that this isn't always the case. The best attitude to bring to such a situation then is not to focus on finding a solution, but rather on how you handle and face the problem. That's Hebrews 12. That's 1 Corinthians 10 in verse 13 that we looked back last week. Well, I thought there's an easy way out. That's what 1 Corinthians 10:13 says. No, it's not. Hebrews 12 and 1 Corinthians 10 in verse 13 tell us that we can endure by faith in Christ. We can face and deal with the problem. Some of the things that make us angry are the result of other people. And you and I have very little control over other people. But we do have control over ourselves. You want to lay aside anger? Be a listener. Be a listener. Proverbs 18 and verse 13, it says, if one gives an answer before he hears, it is folly and shame. Anger is often expressed in that knee-jerk reaction to a situation. You ever approached a situation like that? Something happens and you just react without thinking, without listening to the people involved, without trying to get information about what's gone on. Listening helps us learn and understand the why of a situation. And when we have those knee-jerk reactions, we have not even thought why. Think. In Proverbs 19 and verse 11, good sense makes one slow to anger, and it is his glory to overlook an offense. Can you begin to see how listening and thinking work together? And again, I'm not just up here as some self-help guru, some life coach. I'm just showing you what the Bible says about how to not just deal with anger, but wisdom for how we're to get through life and navigating all kinds of challenges and moral dilemmas that befall us daily. Listening leads to thinking. These will help us deal with a problem instead of becoming a contributing factor in a problem. When you just spew more venom, when you just throw more fuel on a fire, you're not solving a thing. And as the people of God, we're supposed to be the ones who are able to bring a sense of balance, a sense of measure. We're supposed to be a calming influence. So in moments where we're tempted to just release anger, to release pride, think. And then respond. Then respond. James chapter 1 and verses 19 and 20. Know this, my beloved brothers, let every person be quick to hear, slow to speak, slow to anger. For the anger of man does not produce the righteousness of God. That's why we got to lay it aside. It doesn't produce the righteousness of God. It does nothing good for us. So instead of giving into anger, he says, be quick to hear and slow to speak. Now, that may happen. That may take place over a period of time where you're listening and thinking as you're trying to engage in a situation. That may happen, you know, in a shorter period of time. You can listen and think in a matter of minutes. Sometimes situations call for action now, not next week. I understand that. But there is a wise way to approach everything that we face in life. And that's what Proverbs is trying to convey to us in what it has to say regarding anger. In a word, if you want to lay aside anger, we're talking about self-control. That's what endurance and thinking and listening and responding carefully is all about. It's about self-control. And I don't know of a greater challenge that we have before us than to learn how to control me and for you to learn how to control you. Certainly athletes, when we think of athletes, we think of them as being very disciplined people. And that's the image that is conveyed here in Hebrews chapter 12. If we're going to lay aside sin that clings closely to us, we're trying to condition and discipline ourselves so that we might very effectively run the race that is before us. To run it in such a way to encourage others to get in the race with us. I appreciate your attention this morning. I hope the lesson has been helpful as we have thought about sin more specifically in terms of how it manifests itself through anger. If there's anyone here today who would like to begin to lay aside sin, you have an opportunity to do that. Maybe as a child of God, you're thinking that, yes, anger is something you've been struggling with, and then make today the day that you resolve to do better. If there's sin in your life, turn away from it and seek God's forgiveness in prayer. Perhaps you're here today and you're not a Christian. You've never joined the race. Then the way that you are to lay aside sin is in faith, confessing that you believe Jesus is the Son of God, resolving to turn away from sin and to be baptized for the remission and forgiveness of those sins. And you can do that this morning if that's what you want to do. If we can help you to be saved, please come forward and make your request known right now as together we stand and sing.